Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. To celebrate its 40th anniversary, the South Dakota Humanities Council created a book answering this question: what makes a South Dakotan? The council sponsored a series of civic reflections as people discussed potential entries and their own definitions of the question. South Dakotans from across the state and some who left their native land provided submissions that explore what it means to be a South Dakotan. The new book is the fifth volume in the State Humanities Council's South Dakota series. What Makes a South Dakotan was co-edited by John Miller. He's South Dakota State University History Professor Emeritus, and he joins us on the line from Brookings. Dr. Miller, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Good to be with you, Carl.
And you're welcome to call in with your thoughts on what makes a South Dakotan as well. You can reach us at 800-524-3604, 800-524-3604. Well, Dr. Miller, to begin with, where did the idea for this book come from?
Well, this is the 40th anniversary of the South Dakota Humanities Council. We were one of the first, either the first or one of the first two or three, and so they thought it would be a good idea to do something really big in commemoration of this, plus the fact that the Humanities Council had already done four similar books, one on country schools, one on country churches, one on home front stories from wars, and then the most recent one, the fourth one, which I also edited, was the Farm and Ranch Stories, which came out about 3 years ago.
So how many people contributed to this new book, What Makes a South Dakota?
Well, we have upwards of 200 pieces in it. I don't have an exact count, between 180 and 200 pieces or so. We've got both some stories, some remembrances, and some poems in the book, as well as a whole lot of illustrations that really dress it up.
So you just put out the call for people to think about this question and then answer it in their own way?
Well, we actually went about it in three ways. We put out an open call, which was advertised in various places on the website and in meetings, in some newspapers and so forth. And so a lot of our entries came in that way. We also had 10 humanities scholars like myself who went out and organized four meetings in communities from east to west, north to south, invited people to come in and talk about it and then think about how they might rate their pieces, which were supposed to be upwards of 600 words. That was the limit on it, which is two double-spaced typewritten pages, not very long. And then thirdly, in a few cases, we went out and solicited pieces from people that we knew. That's only a very tiny handful. Or somebody saw something interesting in a newspaper and asked permission to have that thing reprinted.
You mentioned the essays being fairly concise. What did that create challenges on the part of the writers, or did this give them the opportunity to just kind of really think and boil down that question? What makes a South Dakotan?
Being a writer myself, it certainly posed a challenge to me, and I'm sure to most of our people. One of my friends here in Brookings wrote a really nice piece about the day that her home burned down when she was a 9-year-old out West River, and it came in around 2,600 words. And I said, Sally, you're going to have to take that back and whittle it down. I can't edit it myself that way. You decide what you want to put in and leave out. And so she got it down to close to 600 words, and yes, it was a challenge. Now, some of them came in even shorter, maybe a page, maybe 300 words or so, but it did force people to focus and concentrate, and in one sense, that's one of the limitations of the book, because nobody could say everything they had to say about what makes a South Dakotan, and they had to leave a lot of things out.
But with so many different people writing these short works, then,
yes,
then you have, I imagine, a lot of different things covered as regards to what it means being a South Dakotan.
Exactly. Of course, there are some things you might expect. This is a very open-ended kind of question. The first four were all rather specific, you know, churches, schools, war stories or home front stories, and farm and ranch stories, and they more or less categorized themselves and settled into rather predictable patterns. But on this one, we weren't really sure what exactly we'd get, except, you know, we thought we'd get a lot of stories about individuals who struck people as being a South Dakota type. So we thought we'd get a lot about the land, and we did. We thought we'd get a lot about the weather, which, just listening to your program today, talking about the drought here, we did get some stories on the dirty 30s and the drought and about blizzards and so forth. And I might have expected to get more stories about places or buildings, talking about historic preservation. And Chris Nelson, you had on, one of my former students here at SDSU that we're very proud of. But we didn't get a whole lot, but we got a few things, like a drugstore that burned down in Mitchell. The store, the person who wrote it was a teenage girl whose father owned the store, and she recalled all the things that had happened in the store under her observance while the store was burning down, and that was a very memorable piece.
You mentioned the expected and the unexpected. Are there, what were the things that were especially unexpected?
You know, you got me off guard there.
Oh, okay.
You know, we got all kinds of things about people growing up in small towns. I should have something. Oh, here's one. Okay, here's one. I just opened one up at random here. Vanilla Bug Spray, which is a poem about a fellow, a grandpa, who smells like a cookie because he puts on bug spray when he goes out. Oh, I mean, we could just open this up at random. Who would expect one about the Pickerel Lake pontoon riding ladies, about a group of women who are in a club who go out on a pontoon boat and all have a good time? We have one about a person who was actually born in the South, on a South Pacific island, and now is a South Dakotan, and talking about her girlfriends and the makeup or cosmetics that they put on. We have one about a woman who went into a post office who had not grown up in South Dakota, and the post office person there asked her if she wanted to weigh her baby, and she took a double take, and she didn't quite understand what they were asking. They said, "Oh yeah, everybody comes in and weighs their baby on our post office scales." These are the kinds of things that certainly I would never have thought of or expected, and I don't think a lot of our readers probably would have either.
Well, Dr. Miller, I'm wondering from your perspective as a historian, right, are we getting stories in this book, What Makes a South Dakotan, that maybe would be lost?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we got a lot of wonderful stories. Like you say, they would be lost. Certain stories, I guess you could classify them in a way into two kinds, the kinds that you might expect. And there are a lot of stories about very kind, generous, thoughtful people who donate their time, who help people when they're down and out, or, you know, maybe when their house burns down or when somebody's sick or ill. But then you get all these other stories by immigrants, by people from other states, by people in circumstances that most of us are not familiar with. So you get both the expected and the unexpected, and they're both, in my opinion, equally valuable. And as a historian, I'm a pack rat. I just hate to throw things away myself, and like to remind myself of the variety of people that you have in every place, whether it's South Dakota or not, and that you really can't accurately stereotype a group of people like South Dakotans. There's no way in which you can say all South Dakotans are this or that.
Even though you can't say that, even though you can't stereotype South Dakotans, is there, from looking through all the poems, essays, and the illustrations in What Makes a South Dakotan, is there anything that all these things have in common?
You know, no, I wouldn't say that all of them have in common, but just like historians, poets, writers, social scientists do. They know there's both diversity and there's a certain amount of unity in humankind. And you can see certain kinds of things showing up again and again and again. And one of those things I think alluded to before is the huge importance of the land in South Dakota. So we have a whole section on land. And, you know, just the kinds of people, there's this phrase that got widely known around the country called Minnesota nice, but we talk about South Dakota nice too, that, you know, there's just a lot of generous, thoughtful, kind, and good-hearted people in this state, in part, I think, because we're so much a state of rural people and small-town people, not that this doesn't carry over into city life either, like Sioux Falls or Rapid City. And while we shouldn't stereotype people, I think we can nod our head and say, yes, that's the kind of person I thought a South Dakotan was.
You mentioned that there are essays in the book from people who left South Dakota. Is there anything unique about those essays when you compare them to those written by people who still live here?
Well, you know, another one of my former students, Chuck Rosh, one of the first ones I had back in the 1970s, and you can read his stuff in USA Today and the Argus Leader and other newspapers. They just seem to have something of a perspective maybe that opens our eyes a little bit. He was talking about he met a person who had a Danish accent, and he started thinking about it. He says, well, I'll bet you're from a certain town. And she said, how in the world did you know that? And he said, well, you know, I started just by a process of elimination thinking of the towns where those kinds of people lived, and I guess that maybe you were from there. I think sometimes it's helpful to have left the state, or in other instances, to have lived elsewhere and come in to see things. It's like fish out of water, you know. When you're in the water, you don't realize you're in the water, but when you come from outside, you understand that there is something distinctive, if not entirely unique, about South Dakotans.
Do you think people who have never lived in South Dakota would be interested in this book?
Oh, definitely. Just like I'd be interested in reading a book like this about what makes a Texan or what makes a Californian or a Floridian. I think we're always interested about the different regions and the different states of the United States. So by no means is this just a book to be read by South Dakotans and congratulate themselves and pat themselves on the back for such wonderful people they are. I would think that anybody moving into this state wanting a single book to find out who their neighbors are going to be and what it's going to be like would want to read this book, and for that matter, you know, anybody outside who's interested in the Great Plains or the Midwest as a region or in South Dakota as a state who wants to find out what kind of people we are would want to read this book.
Well, Dr. Miller, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us on Dakota Midday.
Well, sure, and I hope people out here who haven't seen this book will take a look at it. It's in bookstores, in towns around the state, and Barnes & Noble and so forth, and it's selling like hotcakes. So I know that Sherry DeBoer and her staff down there are planning to do a reprinting of it soon.
Well, thank you so much. That's
You're
Dr.
welcome.
John Miller, SDSU History Professor Emeritus and co-editor of a new book from the South Dakota Humanities Council. It's called What Makes a South Dakotan? And for more information, you can go online and visit the Humanities Council's website, sdhumanitiescouncil.org. And that's it for this edition of Dakota Midday. We came to you today from our studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Thanks to all of our guests on today's show. Stephen Zwemke is Dakota Midday's producer. Special thanks to Kara Hetland. And we'll be back again tomorrow at noon Central, 11 Mountain. I'm Carl Gerke. This is member-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Stay tuned. Talk of the Nation is coming up next.